Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
Any forward progress in technology involves some rational assumption of risk. And the way Google is thinking about that is, okay, how do we proceed both boldly and responsibly? Because the promise of these technologies is just so overwhelming.
Google's chief privacy officer, Keith Enright, talking about their approach to AI and privacy.
Take on tomorrow from PwC's Strategy and Business. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Wer die Finanzen eines Unternehmens managt, ist oft beschäftigt. Sehr beschäftigt. Sehr, sehr, sehr beschäftigt. Konto ist das All-in-One-Geschäftskonto, um Ihr Unternehmen zu managen. Egal, ob Sie selbstständig sind oder die Finanzabteilung eines mittleren Unternehmens leiten. Mit Konto erledigen Sie alles in einer App. Geschäftskonto schnell eröffnen? Erledigt. Ausgabenmanagement? Erledigt. Buchhaltung und Reporting? Erledigt. Konto. Das Geschäftskonto, das zu Ihnen passt.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Namaste. I'm Divina Gupta, and on this edition, we head to India's capital city, Delhi, which has seen highest rainfall in over 80 years, throwing life out of gear.
The roads and the lanes outside my house, they're flooded.
We'll also be hearing from the man who plans India's economic policies.
There are some parts of the country, particularly the eastern half of the country, where growth is slower. But there are parts of the country where there are actually shortages.
And find out how investors are reacting to two big upcoming elections in the US and France. So let's kick off the program with a very quick look at the story everyone is talking about. The first presidential debate took place in the US last night between Joe Biden and Donald Trump.
I was the second youngest person ever elected to the United States Senate, and now I'm the oldest. This guy's 3 years younger and a lot less competent.
Well, I took two tests, cognitive tests. I aced them, both of them, as you know. We made it public. He took none. I'd like to see him take one, just one, a real easy one.
So there was a lot of concern about Mr. Biden's age, because in this 90-minute showdown, Joe Biden gave a stumbling performance. And many Democrats have expressed concern whether he is fit to run for the office. So how are investors looking at this? Let's talk to Shanti Kellerman, Chief Investment Officer at M&G Wealth. And she's going to be with us for the show today. Shanti, thank you for joining us. So from your point of view, whatever you thought of the performance of these two candidates, and the big question is, do markets care?
I don't think markets care that much yet. So we haven't seen a really strong reaction, and there's still a long way to go before November. And you'll see, I think it was a close election to begin with. So this hasn't really changed it, I think, that much dramatically to say it's definitely going to be one or the other or some other candidate.
All right, Shanti, be with us because we want to talk more to you. But let's start in Argentina now. Just 6 months ago, it elected a new president, Javier Milei, who in his inaugural speech said this.
Today we end a long and sad history of decline and decline, and we begin the path of the reconstruction of our country.
He had famously wielded a chainsaw during his campaign, promising a shock therapy for the economy. But when he followed through his promise with a bill to slash public funding, many of his supporters turned against him. Now, tens of thousands of people clashed with police in Argentina's capital earlier this month. But Mr. Milei has secured his first legislative win as the Congress has approved his package of reforms. Freelance journalist Natalio Cosoe is based in Buenos Aires and has been talking to me about what President Milei got over the line last night.
On the one hand, it allows the government to apply changes to the state to cut the number of state-run companies and sell them off, to be allowed to reform the number of people working for the state and also the organization of the state. That's key because Milei came in wanting to shrink the state. He started doing that but he wants more leeway for that. So that's something he's getting from this bill. And also there's a reform of the labor market, which is also crucial for the government, that will is seen by some as making it easier for employers to impose their conditions on employees, but it's also seen by others as a way of making it easier for employers to hire new employees. So we'll see which way it goes. And it also, and this is crucial, open up the door to big investments in certain sectors in Argentina, mining, for instance, giving them huge incentives, fiscal incentives and other sorts of incentives for them to come in with investments larger than $200 million. So that's the crucial elements in this bill.
But just earlier this year, there were a lot of protests on the streets against Milei's program of cuts and economic deregulation. How is it being seen by the public and the voters?
Well, it depends. Those who support him think it's good, and they believe Milei's pledge that this will help Argentina come out of something that looks like a never-ending economic crisis and inability for Argentina's economy to grow, a constant situation of high inflation. But those opposing it believe that what he wants is to dismantle the state and the protections given by the state for those who are most vulnerable. Also, they feel that he's against labor rights in general. They also feel that this special regime for large investments will allow big companies from abroad to come in and take the natural resources from Argentina without actually giving much back. And they feel in general that this bill and the government's policies favor those who are wealthier and actually do not protect particularly those who are weaker in society.
But do you think that this bill has been significantly watered down from the initial proposal of Javier Milei? Because initially, for example, he had proposed that the government would have privatized dozens of state firms, which is needed to boost Argentina's sagging economy.
That's correct. Some of the elements within the bill have been watered down, and that's probably one of the strongest ones. The fact that that list of dozens of companies was reduced to less than a dozen companies approximately. And also it's very limited what can be done with some of those if eventually part of them or all of them are privatized. So yes, and that's why I think it's important to look into this 6-month negotiation as a proof of the workings of Argentina democracy, federal democracy, where every stakeholder within our democratic system managed to chip in and argue for whatever they thought was best.
Will this business-friendly plan create the much-needed high-income jobs?
Well, that's a promise Milei has made to Argentinians, and that's what he's arguing he's trying to do. But as I said, those who don't believe in his plan think that it's actually the opposite what's going to happen. It's impossible to tell now, because now what we're seeing is not that, but the promise of the government is that in the next few months, that is exactly what's going to happen.
Natalia Cossoy, journalist from Argentina. Now let's cross the globe and go to another democracy, the world's largest democracy, which is India, because in its capital city, Delhi, the city witnessed its heaviest rainfall today, highest in over 80 years. The rain caused part of the roof of Delhi airport to collapse, killing one person, injuring 8 others and leading to flight cancellations for much of the day. Our South Asia correspondent Anbarazan Ethirajan reports from Delhi.
There was chaos outside Terminal 1 of Delhi airport this morning after a portion of the canopy outside the departure entrance collapsed. It killed one person and 8 others were injured. Departing flights from that terminal was suspended early afternoon. That caused a lot of chaos for travellers who were planning to go to other parts of India. And this terminal was mainly for domestic airport. The other terminals were operating normally. Pictures on social media showed how the heavy steel girders fell on several cars, trapping people underneath. Now, this has also triggered a war of words between the governing BJP on the opposition Congress Party. This particular terminal building was inaugurated by Prime Minister Narendra Modi as part of a refurbishment project a few months ago. And whereas the civil aviation minister says the part which collapsed this morning was built 15 years ago. That means it was under the rule of Congress. But then the Congress party was questioning about the quality of safety standards, the construction projects. Now, the flights are operating from other terminals. They have been diverted. So until all the repair works are carried out, the government here says that the departing flights won't be operating from Terminal 1. But this has come as a huge embarrassment for the governing BJP-led coalition, because only a few weeks ago, a couple of bridges, under construction bridges in the eastern state of Bihar also collapsed.
That's BBC's Anbarasa Netarajan from Delhi. But elsewhere in the city, drains overflowed, as he was talking about. Roads were blocked and life was thrown completely out of gear for 20 million residents. One of them is Ashima.
I live in the south side of Delhi and it's been raining quite a lot since morning. The roads and the lanes outside my house, they're flooded. Usually it takes me 20 minutes to commute to my workplace. Today it took me 2 hours, all because the roads are blocked, the water is overflowing, the drainage system is not working properly, and it's a lot of hassle at our end.
Another listener, Devyani, told us the streets outside her flat in the Gurgaon area, which is very close to the airport, were flooded.
I think it started raining around 4 a.m. in the morning, and eventually when I got up and got ready to go to work, I realized that the street under my house is flooded. And it was quite shocking to see that Gurgaon, a city which is neighboring to the capital, New Delhi, and is a very prosperous city, has such kind of infrastructure issues. I also believe that there was a lot of traffic jams everyone had to face today. Even I had to face a lot of traffic while reaching office. I mean, I wish I had the opportunity to work from home. Unfortunately, I did not. I had to go to work. And it's really shocking. And I think the authorities must do something about it.
So a tough day for many in the city. Water levels are receding there in many parts. But talking about India, this just shows the work that is cut out for the new government to upgrade infrastructure and invest in there to make global cities. So earlier this week, I caught up with Sanjeev Sanyal. He's a member of India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi's Economic Council. So he's involved in policy-making decisions of the government. And he started by telling me where he's seeing India's economy growing.
So there's no question that services will be a very important part of the story for two reasons. First of all, it already is about 2/3 of our economy is services-driven. So many of these services are exportable, which would not have been the case in earlier generations. But this is not to suggest, as some other economists have suggested, that we are going to ignore manufacturing or even, for that matter, agriculture. So just to give you an illustration, we already are the world's largest pharmaceuticals manufacturer. You know, similarly, just in the last 4 years, we have emerged from being not a very major player in, say, the electronics industry to becoming the second largest producer of smartphones in the world. So there are many other areas where we can compete and we will compete.
We're also looking at a very high youth unemployment in India. Now, how do you see that being addressed, especially in the new government?
So youth unemployment is a serious issue, particularly given our demographics. But let me point out to you that the unemployment rate for the youth is actually declining over time. So it is not the case which some economists try to say that, you know, India has not been able to generate jobs. We have been able to generate jobs and we have been able to keep up. But we do have a backlog.
How do you see that India can actually absorb what the International Labour Organization has said, 65% of its youth which are unemployed?
ILO's numbers are completely wrong. We've raised many issues with their calculations. I keep coming back to the point. Compounding of growth is the single biggest necessary condition to generate jobs.
So you talk about compounded growth and you've said that most of it will come from the services industry. Where do you see companies investing in it? There is lack of private investment in the economy. So how do you see that being generated?
First of all, this is not entirely the case that Indian private sector is not investing. You talk to any company, they're doing massive investments. And in fact, we are, stretching at the seams in certain areas like, for example, civil aviation and tourism, huge job generators. The problem, as I keep pointing out, is that there are some parts of the country, particularly the eastern half of the country, where growth is slower. But there are parts of the country where there are actually shortages.
So that's the point. So where do you get the investment from? Who's coming and creating those kind of factories?
First of all, a large part of infrastructure has to be publicly provided. And we are building that. And that infrastructure, because our infrastructure doesn't exist in many areas, has huge social and economic returns. So if an area doesn't have highways and suddenly has world-class highways, it not only creates the jobs when it's being built, but then it allows for all kinds of activities to happen in that area, which it simply couldn't happen.
Foreign investors coming to India, they also have a concern about the red tapism, the ease of doing business. Now, how do you see that being addressed, especially with a government which is a coalition government, and there would be a consensus that needs to be built here?
There is a huge emphasis on ease of doing business and removing red tape. I've personally been involved in many, many efforts to remove them. The fact that we are able to generate these very high growth rates is precisely because we have made it much easier to do business and we have taken tough policies and introduced. Now, as far as the stability of this government is concerned, I have no idea what the big deal is. Here is a coalition that has returned for the third time, fought together, it got a majority. You look across Europe, all the governments are post-election alliances and nobody seems to have a problem in it. Whereas here there is a pre-election alliance with a very significant majority. So I think Prime Minister Modi has more than adequate cushion to be able to push through whatever tough decisions that need to be taken.
Sanjeev Sanyal, economic advisor to India's Prime Minister and part of the Economic Council there. Now, we've been talking about elections. We started with the first presidential debate in the US, and now we're looking this weekend at France, where after the announcement of snap parliamentary election this weekend is the first of a two-round election in the country. And it's a poll regarded by many as the most consequential in France for decades. For now, the National Rally is ahead in opinion polls and came top in the recent European elections. And France hasn't had a far-right administration since the end of the Second World War. And the National Rally is the alliance and the party towards the far right. Now, there's also an alliance of the left parties called the New Popular Front. And President Macron's centrist pro-business party seems to be lagging behind in the polls. So on World Business Report, we are taking a look at the economic consequences that are expected from this election. First, let's get in some reaction of people on this.
My name is Eloise. We know that it's important for us to vote because it's our future. But there is a lot of judgment by other people. If we vote right, oh, you're racist. But if we vote left, we are with no opinion. We are just a follower. So it's difficult. And I feel very stressed because I know it's important. But there is a lot of pressure, especially on young people.
I'm not going to play the game they tell us to play to vote against what they call the great threat to the nation. I'm not going to play that political game.
So those are voices from France. Lots to talk about there. Klaus Vistessen is chief Eurozone economist from Pantheon Macroeconomics, joining me from London. Thank you so much for being with us. First of all,
thank you.
Investors have been jittery and we've heard different voices from the voters. But tell us from this, there was a sell-off in French stocks and government bonds when the snap election announcement was made. What is the main concern that you see among investors for France's economy?
Well, I think there's a layer of uncertainty. First of all, this was not expected, right? And that alone has, you know, caught many investors by surprise. And, you know, when investors are caught by surprise, they sell. And then, of course, there's the result. And it looks as if the parliament will be split down the middle. And even if it's not, it certainly looks as if the sort of Macron's centrist coalition will be all but eviscerated, right? I mean, they'll basically be the third largest coalition perhaps in the parliament. So again, and nobody really knows what what then is supposed to take over from that. So I think that's really the uncertainty.
Yes, but looking at the economic plans that the far right and the far left parties have talked about, it seems that one thing that they agree on is decreasing the pension age, from 64 to 62. And this was one of the hard-fought reforms by President Macron. How's it going to impact the spending plans and France's budget if it goes ahead?
Well, yeah, yes, that's correct. Both the left-wing and right-wing coalition wants to roll back Mr. Macron's pension reform. And in general, I would say the left-wing and the right-wing economic plans are, I mean, objectively speaking, quite generous, right? And there is this question now about fiscal sustainability in France in terms of how are they going to pay, how are they going to finance it? Which parts of the program are most important to them if they can't get everything through? Again, that's part of the uncertainty that nobody really knows the answer to.
And the NFP, which is, again, the parties of left alliance, they've talked about taxing the rich and the billionaires. Do you think that is a realistic solution at this point of time, looking at the debt crisis that France is facing?
Well, first of all, I would say NFP's program is really sort of unapologetically socialist. So in that sense, I think it's consistent. But I think that the way they want to tax with very, very high marginal tax rates on the wealthy, usually it's very difficult to get that tax because that money just leaves. So I don't know. I don't think that's realistic. But again, in practice, there's many permutations here. And I think, you know, until we see the makeup of the parliament, it's very difficult to figure out exactly what can be done and what can't be done.
And of course, there's also another plan to tax, to put down taxes on electricity, for example. But we will be talking more about that in coming days. Thank you so much for joining us.
Klaus
Vistessen, Chief Eurozone Economist from Pantheon Macroeconomics. Shanti Kellerman is still with us. Shanti, let's also look at the inflation figures that have just come out in the last couple of hours. And it seems to be a good news. Tell us about that.
Yep.
So from the US.
So the personal consumption expenditures index, which is the Federal Reserve's favorite inflation measure, fell from 2.8% to 2.6%. That was in line with expectations. So we haven't seen a huge reaction from markets, but it's still a good news that it's falling as expected. So there's a 50% chance of a rate cut in September at the moment. We'll see how that evolves.
And in corporate news, one stock that has been making headlines is about the sportswear maker Nike that fell by 12% today after it said that the competition from rivals could dent its profit.
Yeah, so Nike's been losing market share of some of its competitors, shoe brands like Hoka and On. And there's just been a huge explosion of other competitors in that athletics leisure space, you know, with kind of normal fashion brands also going there as well. They lowered their outlook for revenue in the future. They have some cost saving plans underway. They're trying to focus more on selling direct to consumers and online. But yeah, obviously a negative reaction in the markets and probably a bit of work to do to get back.
But could the upcoming Olympic Games in Paris really help the company regain momentum with consumers?
It depends on what sponsorships they have. So I think Olympics, they're always an opportunity, but you'll have, whatever brands end up sponsoring people. And it also, a lot of it is about what, you know, sports personalities they have signed, who actually succeeds. So yeah, potentially an opportunity. We'll see.
Shanti Kellerman, Chief Investment Officer at M&G Wealth. Thank you so much for joining in. Let's move over to Spain now, where the rise in tourism and gentrification of areas as they become fashionable is having an impact on fast food markets. Many markets have transformed from traditional bustling centres serving locally sourced products to late night hotspots full of bars and also different eateries. And as supermarkets slowly move in, those who still prefer to buy foods which is sourced locally are now forming small cooperatives supplied by local farmers. Ashish Sharma went to visit one local association that meets weekly in San Fernando Market in the Spanish capital, Madrid.
Carlos Gilo con Miguel Crespo.
Lucia and Marta prepare the shopping bags for the 30 members of their food association. Today, apart from a butcher and a fruit stall, this market is full of chic bars and trendy eateries, largely visited by tourists.
Hello, Miguel.
Hello.
What I have today?
How are you?
bad. Potatoes?
According to agri-food cooperatives of Spain, associations like the one in San Fernando contribute to generating a turnover of over $43 million through a national membership network of more than 1 million people. These associations have helped create over 122,000 jobs, predominantly in rural areas. They're formed by local people.
My eggs. I'm going to get the eggs.
People like Irene.
I also used to come here to buy fruits and fish and, like, food. And now this market has become mostly, like, a place for drinking. Local shops, the local, like, markets. Family markets are disappearing in our neighborhoods.
Erin McNulty works for an organization called Food Justice. She says the problem with many markets like San Fernando is that they're partially privately owned, and that means the pull towards enterprises that can make money overrides the needs of a local community.
We need the markets to be back in public hands. They need to be in network with local food systems. They should include these local markets as points to guarantee local access to food. And at the moment, the food national food strategy is only thinking about exporting food, and it's not thinking about feeding the local population.
Now, I've just seen you, Martha, going up to collect your little basket. So what have you got this week?
Eggplant, cucumber, garlic, lettuce.
How much do you pay for that?
Yes, in fact, I am the person who collects all the money for all the people, so I can tell you.
So you know.
For example, my bag is only vegetables, and it's 26 euros per month, and with fruit, is 36 per month. 24 eggs for 8 euros, that is cheap as well.
The association is driven by the principle of eating food that is locally produced, ecologically cultivated and seasonal, which means group members don't know what food they will have every week, as another member, Carol, explained.
We know the vegetables when we collect that, not before. We can choose. Fruit is very difficult to have from season, but most of the vegetables are from Madrid and from this farmer. I think it's good to help and to support local farmers, also to eat ecologic vegetables. In Madrid, there are a lot of different groups that support this kind of local farmers.
Here in Spain, the choice of buying locally and more ecologically from markets is now under threat, as stall owners convert their spaces into bars or gastro food stalls. But the growth of cooperatives and associations filled with people who prefer to support local producers does suggest, and forgive the pun, that there is a market that can cater for all tastes.
That's Ashish Sharma reporting from Spanish capital city, Madrid. You've been listening to World Business Report. Some other news that we are following on bbc.com/business. If you want to know about UK's economy, you can head there. It seems that the economy grew by more than initially estimated in the first 3 months of 2024 as the UK emerged from recession. New figures have been now released. Thank you for being with us.
Sommer, Sonne, sowas von besonders. Jetzt die coolen Mercedes-Benz Sommerhits entdecken. Über 4000 attraktive Vorführ- und Geschäftswagen aus unserem Bestand. Von A-Klasse bis V-Klasse, von Cabriolet bis SUV. Alle kurzfristig verfügbar, alle zu Top-Konditionen, alle für Sie bereit. Sommer, Sonne, Sommerhits. Nur bei Ihrer Mercedes-Benz-Niederlassung vor Ort.
Any forward progress in technology involves some rational assumption of risk. And the way Google is thinking about that is, okay, how do we proceed both boldly and responsibly? Because the promise of these technologies is just so overwhelming.
Google's chief privacy officer, Keith Enright, talking about their approach to AI and privacy.
Take on tomorrow from PwC's Strategy and Business, available wherever you get your podcasts.